Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. The clay court season for 2016 is underway, not all of it red clay, some of it green in Charleston, where Sloane Stephens is up against Elena Vesnina in the final as we record. But the first really big event on the surface starts this week with the Monte Carlo Rolex Masters. It's not actually a mandatory event, but judging by the field of players, it might as well be. Djokovic, Wawrinka, Federer, Nadal, Murray, all there, and it promises to be a fantastic week. There to enjoy every drop of sunshine, every glimpse of the most stunning panoramic view of the ocean imaginable, every topspun forehand and slide into the red dirt, is Catherine Whittaker. I'm not.
You're not, are you, David?
I'm in a little windowless room near Birmingham. I'm in a room so small, Catherine, that I could actually touch all four walls at the same time if I had enough
arms. I have to say, I mean, spaciousness is... There's many things that Monte Carlo has going for it, and spaciousness is not one of them. I'm in my hotel room at the moment, and pleasant as the surroundings are, space and property square inches are at quite the premium out here. So it's not exactly the most cat swingy hotel room I've ever been in.
Cat swingy. That is a wonderful description. Do you have a window, though?
Oh, I've got two windows, David. They've treated me to two windows. So it's the lap of luxury.
Well, you're beating me 2-0. And you're in Monte Carlo when I'm near Birmingham. So I think you've won hands down. But you're going to be there reporting over the course of the next week. You were there last week. What's it like, Monte Carlo?
It's the most fascinating place. I mean, I can't believe that you actually lived here, David. That staggers me. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, why have I asked that
question? Exactly. You know what it's like better than I do. I mean, I absolutely love it to visit. I would never want to live here because it just seems sort of so detached to me from what I know as the real world. You know, the people watching here is a jaw-dropping experience. You know, they're just people that lead such a different life to the one I do. It's, it's sort of fascinating voyeurism, but I just can't imagine a young David Law fitting into that scene somehow.
What are you saying?
I'm saying I can't see you sort of in a Panama hat and deck shoes and sort of Ray-Ban Wayfarer sunglasses reclining on the French Riviera somehow.
I'm deeply, deeply hurt. I mean, because that's exactly what I used to wear in the 4 years that I lived in
Monte Carlo. Don't think they make deck shoes that big, David.
Well, look, all you have to do is go down to the harbour and grab yourself a couple of canoes and you're sorted. I mean, that's, you know, they fit like a glove, I'm telling you. I regaled the story a year ago about how I used to go running around the casino square, sweating all over the Ferraris and basically just getting dismissed by the doorman who stood there saying, "Will you please go away, you scum of the earth?" Monte Carlo is a very unusual place. It is an extraordinary place for a 20-something Brummy to spend a few years, and that's exactly what I had the opportunity to do. And it is the most stunning tennis tournament. As we've said, the field is extraordinary, and I think we're in for quite a week. I mean, Catherine, the lineup itself, you've had today the sort of tournament preview day, isn't it? They kind of have like a soft launch to the tournament in Monte Carlo, don't they? Because They've had a couple of main draw matches. They've had the qualifying matches. But it all feels like it gets underway tomorrow, doesn't it? We're going to hear from the players in a few minutes' time. You've got some answers, some fascinating answers from some of the big names that we're going to hear, Djokovic and Nadal and Federer, in just a moment or two. But the tournament itself, it's got one of those kind of Sunday starts.
Yeah, the French Open that sort of really began that Sunday start thing, and Monte Carlo subsequently adopted it. But yeah, a soft start. It's not, they're just sort of, I guess it gives fans an extra weekend day to come and watch some tennis. So can't argue with that, I suppose. But yeah, it does feel like a bit of a false start, if you like, and that tomorrow will be the day that things really get underway. But they've had packed crowds in there today, so you can't really argue with it.
No, you can't. And it also heralds the return of Roger Federer, doesn't it? Hasn't played a match since Australia, because that rare thing, a knee surgery that he had, basically having an accident with his kids in the bath, and hasn't played a match since, got ill in Miami, so couldn't make his return there. So how's he feeling?
But I am rested, you know, in the sense mentally and physically. You know, I feel like really, really good. I still feel like probably every week that goes by, I'm going to get better, you know. And then hopefully by Paris, that's where you really want to be at, you know. This should not be a problem, you know, 7 times, 5 sets, okay. I'm ready for that. And then I believe in these breaks, you might feel it either in the moment sometimes, or especially then towards the end of the season or at the end of your career, you know, when again you've been able to avoid another injury, or you're still mentally fresh to grind it out, go to travel, train hard. I believe you can add everything at the back end of your career. So it depends a little bit on how you see it, but I do believe in whatever rest it is. Maybe from injury, may it be from just a training block or a vacation. It all ends up somewhere in a canister where you can like pull from it. You know, you see it was, I don't know, Tommy Haas, for instance. He's been injured for almost 3 or more years of his career, and he's still on tour because he's just mentally still fresh to go, and he loves it.
Well, there's Roger Federer talking about his return to action. And as usual, Catherine, he's got a philosophical approach, and he can even see the positives in having months off and being able to dip into his reserves of energy as a result.
Yeah, I love the idea of this canister of energy that Federer has been carting around with himself
Amazon
for his whole career. Yeah, I sort of now see him as some sort of Ghostbuster type person with a tennis energy canister on his back instead of whatever it is that the Ghostbusters had on their back. Yeah, I love it. And it's sort of, dare I say it, ties into an analogy I sometimes use, which is that I actually don't use it necessarily so much in relation to Federer, but the idea of these guys having finite reserves, and that every match they step onto court, you know, depending on the length of it, is using up that finite reserve. And I think that's sort of what Federer was saying, yet slightly more eloquently in a second language. Thanks, Federer. I mean, who knows the word canister in a second language, fluent or not? I mean, that's pretty niche. And I think he makes an incredibly good point. Players, very generally speaking, players that have had long layouts with injury, they're sort of buying back time, aren't they, which they can use at the end of their career. And Tommy Haas is a fantastic example of that. I know Federer has a lot of respect for what he's doing, but then, you know, Federer is doing the same, but better, I suppose. He's still number 3 in the world. It's amazing.
Yes, really, really irritating for any mere mortal on the planet. Although we have to say that one man has found the kryptonite in recent times to deal with him, and he's found the same with everybody. That is Novak Djokovic, who comes in as the defending champion. He's only basically lost half a match all year, withdrew after being a set down to Feliciano Lopez. I took a bit of stick after last week's podcast, Catherine, from somebody who suggested that I was taking away the glory of Feliciano Lopez in that match, but I don't think Lopez would mind too much just admitting that, frankly, it wasn't the real Novak Djokovic out there who lost that match. He got eye problems, he withdrew after a set, so that doesn't count, as we said last week. But Djokovic comes in, all eyes are going to be on the French Open, as always at this time of year, because it's the one big title, obviously the Olympics as well. He hasn't won yet, but he hasn't won in terms of the Slams, the French Open, to this point. And the question is whether it becomes an obsession for him. One wonders how Novak Djokovic handles it.
It is a wish, and it is a goal, like anything else is and was. And that's how it's going to stay. In terms of preparation for Roland Garros, and nothing major will change. Of course, I will intend to improve the game, to get better, and try to get a step further to in Paris than I've done in the last couple of years. But I'm not the only one that wants to win that title. Knowing that I was a few sets away from winning title a couple of times, that fact alone, you know, gives me comfort and confidence, and it actually allows me to believe that whatever I have done so far can be enough, and I believe it's enough. So let's see.
So there's Novak Djokovic, Catherine, and, well, I mean, if he is stressed at all, if he does feel the pressure at all, he doesn't show it.
No, but I mean, I think he's the master of not showing it, even more so than you know, the serene Roger Federer. I do think he has absolutely perfected the art of not giving anything away in these sorts of situations. And I think probably what he says is a roughly a reflection of how he feels. I do believe and get the sense that he's a person that is quite good at sort of controlling his emotions and how his mind works and framing the thoughts that he has in such a way that he can make them positive. I mean, I find that practically impossible, but some people seem to be able to have this sort of weird, admirable mindfulness that, as I say, like, even if he does have a moment of feeling obsession, he's sort of able to frame it in a way that it becomes a positive for him. But nonetheless, I cannot really believe, bottom line, that he is not, you know, consumed with desire to win that French Open. How could he not be? How could he not be?
One man who won that title 8 years in a row, I actually had to count it up. I mean, it was so extraordinary to see how many years in a row Nadal had won that tournament in Monte Carlo before it finally came to an end in 2013, Djokovic dethroning him there. And he was probably the most interesting, I would say, of the interviewees that you got some audio from over there that I heard. And Nadal was talking about what it is like to be on a roll like that, because he knows what it is like to have to keep on backing it up, to keep having to defend these titles, to keep having to be the man that everybody wants to beat. And he doesn't see it as a problem for Djokovic.
When you win, it's easier to keep winning. No? When you lose, it's easier to keep losing. That's always the same. Dynamics and these kind of things are always the same story, and especially when an unbelievable player like him is with this unbelievable dynamic, so it's difficult to stop him.
I found that fascinating, Catherine, the way Nadal summed it up. The idea that once you're winning, it's actually easier. The pressure comes when you stop winning.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically sort of summed up there the very principle of momentum, hasn't he? But, I mean, given everything he's experienced in the sport, it comes from such a position of authority, and it sounds so simple coming from his lips. You know, when you're winning, it is actually easier to keep winning than to lose. And, of course, conversely, you know, when you're losing, it's easier to keep losing. And that's, you know, a slight exaggeration of the position he's in at the moment, but he's certainly more familiar with, you know, the negative role that a player can get on than he ever has been at any point in his past. He's becoming so philosophical, isn't he? In his not old age at all. But it is
funny though how players become more interesting sometimes when they get older. I wonder whether Djokovic will let the guard down a little bit the more he wins. I think at the moment he's just so determined not to let anything get in the way that I don't think we always hear the truthful answer from Novak Djokovic, because I think he wants to play it safe and let his tennis do the talking. I think Federer has become bolder as the years have gone by. Murray certainly has. Nadal probably most interestingly of the lot has, because he always, you know, obviously it's taken him time to really grasp the English as a second language, but he's fascinating now.
Oh, he really is. He's so interesting now, so reflective. I think there's just this element of self-reflection that we didn't. I mean, I guess you rarely see it in any early 20-year-olds, you know, let alone tennis players. I think that's the most interesting development in hearing him talk. He's so honest now. He bears his soul in a way, which I don't think he ever used to. And when he says, as he did today, that I feel so much less stressed than I did this time last year, you know, he really, really means it, you know. And this time last year, he was quite stressed. And I think the fact that he has slipped down the rankings a bit and there's not this, you know, when he came into the clay court season last year, everybody was holding their breath. They were saying, okay, well, Nadal, since his comeback, hasn't been the Nadal that we know, but will it all change when he gets onto the clay? You know, there were so many expectations. Everyone was holding their breath for what would come. And it's like all of that's gone now. He's sort of got nothing to prove, nothing to live up to almost anymore. And I think that's a very different position to be in, one that he seems to be preferring a little bit.
Could make him ever more dangerous, couldn't it? It could be the flip side to the winning every week and getting the momentum that way. This could be a way to free him up, one suspects. And it's going to be brilliant, this Monte Carlo tournament, isn't it? I mean, it's a 56 draw, a 64 on the list, but the top players have byes. But everybody's there, everybody.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, last year Andy Murray wasn't here. He made the decision to go and play in Germany, won that tournament, and subsequently went on an unbeaten run on clay. But he was very interesting talking today. Unfortunately, we can't quite use the audio because he was a little bit mumbly, so it didn't quite meet the high quality threshold that we have here on the Tennis Podcast. But to summarise a little bit of what he had to say, he was very interesting. Very few questions about the baby, only one, in fact, from French journalist just asking whether he was sleeping okay, whether he was being kept from getting a good night's sleep, and he said, no, I'm sleeping just fine, she's very good. And everything else was all about the tennis, and he seemed to be fine and happy about that. He was saying he feels completely different mentally about the clay this year to last year. It sounds like last year was a real light bulb moment almost for Murray on clay. Not moment, you know, sort of series, long protracted moment, I suppose. But he really, really had a breakthrough, particularly in terms of his movement on clay last year. It feels a little bit like he's found the key to unlock the door. And he now, for the first time, believes that possibly he has it within him to win the French Open. I think he took so much from how close he came to beating Djokovic in Paris last year. And I think it's a slightly different kettle of fish for him this year, the clay court season, certainly mentally.
Slightly different kettle of fish. There's a lovely little expression that I'm sure some people are thinking, well, where on earth has that come from? What does that mean? I barely understand it myself.
I've got nothing to say to that, David. You're waiting. You expecting me to explain the origin expression?
I'd love a definition. All right. Well, we'll look it up for next week, Tennis Podcast listeners. Keep an eye on at Tennis Podcast on Twitter. We may be able to unearth the actual origin of a kettle of fish. Anyway, Novak Djokovic has got a bye through the first round, and he could. He could play Gael.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
On feast in the third round, Catherine. Organise that.
Well, I'll do my darndest, David. It's a shame for Gael Monfils. I know that would be fantastic to have that sort of match early on in the tournament. And Gael Monfils plays so well here. I mean, he was brilliant last year beating Federer. That was such a great match. He really was sensational. But he will almost certainly lose to Novak Djokovic. And I think that's a shame.
I don't know about that, Catherine Whittaker. The form I saw from Monfils last year beating Federer, I remember watching that and thinking his movement and the way he strikes the ball on clay, I just think on a good day he could cause Djokovic some problems. I've said it. There you are, everybody.
You've said the vaguest sequence of words ever. On his day, he could cause Djokovic some problems. I mean,
all right, I'm saying he's going to beat him. There you are.
You are saying Gael Monfils is going to knock out Djokovic in the third round. That's what's going to happen. Wowzers.
You heard
well, at least
me. There you are.
At least I've pushed a bold prediction out of you for once.
That doesn't count if he gets injured or anything like that. If the conditions are a bit ropey, if it's too windy, or if he gets injured, or if it starts raining, none of that counts. All right? Anyway, so what are the matches we've got to look forward to over the next week? Rafael Nadal could face Lucas Rossell in the second round in his first match. That'd be fun. Stan Wawrinka against Borna Coric is a potential match for Wawrinka first up. I wouldn't mind seeing that one. Andy Murray has Herbert or Paya in the first match that he might play. But everywhere through the draw, I just love the shift in surfaces from hard court to clay. I actually remember the first time I ever even saw a clay court, and it had this sort of mystique about it because we don't have clay courts in Great Britain, not many of them anyway. At least I'd never seen one when I was a lad. And when I first got to play on it, I mean, you can just imagine, can't you, how uncoordinated I was and still am. But it was a beautiful sight to at least see clay for the first time.
I fully imagine that, David. It's an image that's all too vivid in my mind, like a giraffe trying to find its feet.
All right. I knew that was coming. I don't want to talk about it. What I do want to talk about is how the Monte Carlo Masters has such a rich history, and we have been asking people for their memories of that great tournament, and there are many of them. We have Soy, who says Chesnikov beating Muster in the 1990 final. 1995, I was there when Muster won from match point down against Becker, and there was also Alberto Mancini beating Becker in 89. That was fun. Ali also remembers Muster's 95 final win over Becker, and also Guga against Arazi in the final in 2001 with Gustavo Kuerten winning that particular title. What about 2014 when Stan Wawrinka won it, says Christina? Well, that was certainly memorable, and perhaps the most memorable in recent years was Djokovic ending Nadal's reign, as Joe reminds us. But it's a fantastic tournament. You know, mine, Catherine, I think, rather than sort of results, the things that really spring to mind for me, it's the first time I ever heard of Rafael Nadal. I remember hearing his name. I think it was when he was still going under the name Rafael Nadal Pereira at the time. And I heard about this teenager who we'd all got to watch out for. It was the first time I ever saw Richard Gasquet play, and I think he reached about the quarterfinals, beat Franco Squillari, lost to Marat Safin, and I always remember Henman afterwards asked about Gasquet, who was only 15 years of age at the time, and he just sort of motioned his single backhand in the air for us, as if to say, that's the shot you want to watch out for, and how right he was. It was one of my early memories as well, Catherine, of Roger Federer, if I am allowed to just name drop a wee bit here. In 2000, in my ATP days, I remember he lost a match to Jiří Novák, you remember, the big Czech player. He lost to him 6-1, 2-6, 7-5. And I remember I was the person who had to take Federer to his post-match press conference. And you know how, I don't know whether they still have it, they used to have an elevator that takes you from the bottom floor up to the top floor where the press room is. Is that still there?
An elevator? No. We're all far too. I mean, if there is, nobody uses it. I certainly don't use it. I'm far too healthy living for that.
Well, I use it, and I would still use it today, even if they hadn't got any need for it. But anyway, Roger Federer and I were in this tiny little elevator together, and he is just sort of looking particularly chastened after losing 7-5 in the third. And he said, "Why do I lose all the close matches?" And I said, I think you're probably asking the wrong person.
Hang on. You were called upon for coaching advice, David. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe it was a question to himself. I don't know. But anyway, I sort of answered it in the best way that I could. I tried to be sort of, you know, a little bit comforting and consoling and encouraging all in the same sentence. And he proceeded to lose his next five matches in a row. So I don't think my coaching career really took off at that. Maybe that would have been my moment. If I'd have said the right thing at that point, maybe he would have thought, do you know what? This guy's got the common touch and the sort of, he may know absolutely nothing about tennis, but he kind of just got the best out of me in that really difficult moment, and look at my results since. Well, it kind of went the other way. So,
oh, it was your sliding doors moment, David.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was. That was some year, 2000 it was, and he went on to lose to Yevgeny Kafelnikov in the first round of Wimbledon. I think he barely had a 50-50 record in his win-loss column. It was when everybody was saying, this kid's unbelievably talented, but we're not actually sure whether he's ever going to make it as a top player. And then there was the moment when he reached the Sydney Olympics. I think he won the bronze medal, or he got to the bronze medal match and lost out to Arnaud Di Pascal. Do you remember him? The French player, very stylish player.
I certainly do, yeah.
Yeah, and anyway, from there he went to Basel and beat Hewitt for the first time. But it was very up and down that year for Roger Federer. But that's my personal memory from Monte Carlo there of him. Have you got any memories, Catherine, you'd like to share?
I've got tons. I mean, most of them are just gazing at what on the telly looked like the most glorious setting for sport ever, and it turns out that it in fact is the most glorious setting for sport.
All right, don't,
in the world.
Don't rub it in.
It's amazing. I know we're doing tennis bucket list in a few short moments, and I'm enjoying mine, experiencing mine right now, because it is just magnificent. If it's not on your bucket list and you haven't been, put it on immediately. I mean, the Richard Gasquet's victory over Federer in 2005 immediately sprung to my mind. I mean, that was an incredible occasion. It really was. And yeah, it was back when we thought, I mean, when we were doing, you know, my rubbish prediction, somebody wrote into us admitting that they thought Richard Gasquet was going to be a Federer Djokovic type world beater for many years, and on that day I think probably everybody did. And I mean, he's had a great career, but in terms of the promise that he showed that day, it's not lived up to it.
No, it's funny how it works like that, isn't it? I mean, it just doesn't always happen the way you think it will. I mean, I think we're experiencing a similar process with Dimitrov, aren't we, in a way? And you know, one wonders whether that will ever change course. But you know, as you know, Catherine, I'm still very much a believer.
We're working through it. The Tennis Podcast is in therapy, trying to come to terms with the potential failure to deliver on talent that Grigor Dimitrov may inflict on us.
Talking of talent, Alex Zverev against Andrei Rublev, a first round in Monte Carlo. Make sure you watch that one.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, Andrei Rublev's not been talked about so much in the past few months. He's one of the hashtag next gen that has gone slightly quieter over the past few months compared to Alex Zverev, who seems to have gone stratospheric since Indian Wells and Miami. So they've got very similar looks about them, haven't they? They're sort of tall, a bit stringy still, but you know, that's largely down to their age and very explosive game. So yeah, I can't wait.
Have you set eyes at all on the fancy zebra-like stripy outfits that all the Adidas players have been given to wear so
briefly,
far?
Briefly, David, and then I averted those eyes because I didn't want to go blind or something. I mean, they're pretty dreadful, aren't they?
No.
Pretty dreadful.
No, they're good. They're really good. Well, for a start, they're stripes. And anybody who wears stripes is all right by me as a West Bromwich Albion fan. They're nearly that, aren't they? I was amused at when Adidas were posting all these social media pictures of Songa and Zverev and Thiem and all these Adidas players in their stripy outfits, and the women, Kerber was in hers as well, and Ivanovic. And then Boris Becker posts a Facebook page of Novak Djokovic wearing what looks alarmingly like a lion's costume.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's going to be a safari themed clay court season, who knows? But I mean, I'm a bit nervous that those zebra outfits are going to be problematic on the TV. I mean, aren't they going to create sort of a magic eye type trippy experience for the eye and the mind? I don't know. I'm not sure about it at all, David.
A bit like blue clay when we had that. I actually ran a poll, Catherine, you'll be pleased to know, about clay. Which is your favourite, green, blue or red? What's your favourite, Catherine?
As we seem to be establishing, I'm a traditionalist, so I'm going to go red. I mean, I'm all for, you know, trying new things. But what I don't quite understand is there's no purpose to the blue clay other than it being blue for the sake of it. I think that's what bothered me. I mean, just colouring something blue for fun.
No, that's not true. It looked, you've just been going on about the stripy outfits and whether it works for TV. I tell you what, blue definitely works on the TV. That is without question.
But red works as well. I think that was a solution without a problem.
Oh, Catherine Whittaker, she just makes too much sense sometimes for my liking. 69% of people, Catherine Whittaker, agree with you. 7% only like green clay, which is rather a disappointment for me and my fellow Incredible Hulk fans. 24% liked blue clay, but yes, red very much the favourite of everybody in the world, it would appear. Certainly those that decided to vote on my poll, and they were many, Catherine Whittaker, even if you don't like them. Now, tennis bucket list. There are plenty of these. This came about because I've been watching Masters Golf over the last few days, just dreaming about what it would be like to be attending the Masters Golf. It's something I've never done. It's something I'd love to do. We have Don, who says, my tennis bucket list is to go to all four slams and go to the Australian Open next year. Joel wants to go to the Oz and the US to complete his set. It seems to be a bit of a theme, that. Michelle would like to go to Roland Garros because she hasn't been there. Luminata Vasilica, wonderful name, says, I'm going to go one time to all the tournaments that Roger Federer plays for a year. That's quite a good idea, isn't it?
I think that might be a fabulous name because it's my brother in social media disguise. That's my theory.
Indeed. Yeah, Vicky Spreadbury says, the Australian Open. My daughter's godmother moved back to Australia. I haven't seen her in 6 years. So tennis and a reunion, that would be ace. I think that's a good point.
I love that she's put the tennis ahead of the family reunion on that list of priorities. Lovely.
PG says Monte Carlo would definitely be my list. Jonathan Woodrow says the South American Golden Swing. Hike from Kyoto, is that right, to Buenos Aires to Rio. And Zer Carenta says, I'd like to see another Brazilian player win three more slams like Guga once did. Please, hashtag my tennis bucket list. What's yours, Catherine?
It's Indian Wells, actually. It's I haven't been to Indian Wells. Everybody that goes is very smug about it, unashamedly smug about it. It looks just glorious, and it falls at a time of the year when my vitamin D stocks are at their lowest ebb. So, yeah, Indian Wells is my tennis bucket list item, or certainly the one at the top.
You see, what you need for your vitamin D stocks is a canister, Catherine Whittaker. That's what you're missing out on.
I just need a canister containing whatever Federer's got in his.
Yeah, okay. Mine is, just if you'd like to know, apart from Masters Golf, mine is actually to go to the French Open. Hard to believe that I've worked in tennis for 20 years and never been to the French Open, isn't it?
That is actually incredible. It's always clashed with the lead-up to Queen's for you, hasn't it? Which is all-consuming for media director David Law.
Yes, it most certainly is. Now, just a couple of notes of results we've had over the last week before we sign off. In Charleston, we mentioned Sloane Stephens against Elina Vesnina. Two players, Vesnina's been in good form all year round. Stephens is up and down, but she had a cracking win the other day. A really good match against Daria Kasatkina, who's my favourite player on the WTA Tour. One of my favourite players in tennis is that young teenager. Have you seen much of her yet?
Yeah, she's cracking. I like her and Margarita Gasparian as well.
I think Kasatkina is going to have much the better career.
I think you're probably right, but it's I'm hard definitely not right. to enjoy the backhand, isn't it? Results aside.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. In Houston, Jack Sock has had a good result. He's got through to the final, plays one Monaco, I think. He's been really badly injured over the last couple of years. So well done to him for getting to the final. In Marrakesh, Del Bonis has beaten Chorich, but that's a good result for Chorich. Sibyl Kova has won the title in, Katowice or Katowice? Has won that title, beating Camilla Giorgi. And so loads of tennis going on, loads of it. We should also just draw your attention to an article by Simon Briggs of The Telegraph, who has written a wonderful article about Monte Carlo. Get this for a headline, Catherine. Tennis is a juicy game of love, money and murder. And Monte Carlo's seen it all.
Sorry, when was the said murder? Do I need to get out of town?
Okay. Just read the article, Catherine. I mean, you know, that's why you have to read it on the Telegraph website. Well worth a look. Catherine, what are you going to do now? I mean, when tennis starts tomorrow, how busy are you going to be?
Very, very busy, but I've got some time now to enjoy a Monte Carlo based dinner and just generally be smug about that. And then, it all kicks off tomorrow, but in a good way.
It does. Catherine, go and have a good time. We're just going to sign off from the tennis podcast with, it's sad news that the tennis world has had over the past week, but we wanted to make a reference to it because it is a man, Julian Hoffelin, a Belgian who is very, very well known in tennis circles, a coach and a friend to many. He spent 6 years at the Lawn Tennis Association in Great Britain. He coached Dan Evans and Joe Konta for a while as well. There's really been, over the last week, an outpouring of grief and tributes since the news came through that he passed away at the age of 49. Very, very sad news that Julian Hoffelin has died, but we will remember him well, and our very best wishes go to his family and friends. That's all we have time for on the Tennis Podcast for this week. We'll be back next week, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.